BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I'm Sergei Buntman. I'm a journalist. And 31 years ago, we started Radio Echo Moscow with my friend Sergei Korzen.
Sergei has spent decades on the airwaves of Moscow's first Russian independent radio station, providing an alternative to state media's version of events.
We were the first, and we lived all the coups of 91, 93, and all the events, the Chechen wars, and so on and so forth.
But this war in Ukraine was the final straw, or what overfilled the cup, as they say in Russian.
The 1st of March, they stopped our broadcasting, and our website was closed. And then our board closed and liquidated the whole company.
By they, Sergei means the Russian government and President Putin. So, why hadn't this happened before?
It wasn't so dangerous and it wasn't so important for Putin and his administration. I think he was sure of his success.
In Soviet times, to get around censorship, people created their own publications to hand out door to door. It was called Samizdat. Having been taken off air, Sergei and his colleagues refused to stay silent. Instead, they are effectively creating a modern version of Samizdat to reach their audience online.
Now we have a chat and Telegram, and we try to support each other, and we go on. We created two channels on YouTube.
But that too comes with a real personal risk, especially as attacks on those who are willing to challenge the Kremlin ramp up.
It becomes very dangerous for many journalists, but it's our duty, it's our profession. We have to do it. We have to do it.
I'm Mariana Spring, and I'm the BBC specialist disinformation reporter. Since the war began, my inbox and social media accounts have been flooded with messages from people in Ukraine, Russia, and Britain. And as the images of the Russian invasion were beamed around the world, I was hearing about a very different battle, one that's also having real consequences for the people caught up in it. There's an old saying that the first casualty when war comes is truth. And as the war in Ukraine continues, it's clear that Russia's armed assault is accompanied by an onslaught of disinformation, spread by trolls, state media, and influencers, both online and beyond. In this podcast, I hear about the extraordinary information battle being waged over Ukraine and the people caught up in it. I'm Mariana Spring, and for Radio 4, this is War on Truth.
Radio is a wonderful thing, because television, we have to watch it. And radio, it's our friend. He's in our head. And I loved, when I was young and when I was a little boy, I loved radio shows. You know, for years, I used to read books for children on Echo Moscow. Every Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning.
It was that passion for radio that inspired Sergei and a close friend from university to set up the station back in 1990.
When Gorbachev came and the perestroika began a new law about media, and very good law. It was possible to create private radios, private newspapers. So we created this radio, and we loved it, and we love it. It's our home.
News and talk shows about different social and political issues filled the airwaves of Echo of Moscow in the years to come. And the station tried to present a range of views, including those challenging the Russian government. That led to threats that the station would be taken off air all the way back in 1991, and when Russia invaded Crimea more recently in 2014. Its journalists have often been targets for abuse.
The facts became not at all important for people. And it's a danger, the threats on the internet, it becomes disgusting. It's a disgusting form of communication, I think. It becomes dangerous.
it did become very dangerous. In 2017, a presenter was stabbed several times by an intruder who got into the station's offices.
And the propaganda in the society became very hard, very violent, and people became more violent than before.
But still, the radio station continued broadcasting, and Sergei kept presenting his programs. That was until a few days after the war started in Ukraine.
It was a free evening for me, the 1st of March, and I went to eat something and to drink some beer. And I see on my phone, it's closed. And I went to our office, it was very close.
Анна, Марианна, Мария, Михаил, Николай, Павел, Парфий, Роман и Федор.
Радио «Эхо Москвы».
Those were the last moments of Echo of Moscow, as it was taken off air. At that point, there was still hope. It still had its YouTube channel with over a million subscribers.
It was clear then we'll go on YouTube, but some days later, even our channel was closed. They cut all the cables, and we couldn't, because the company was liquidated. It was very quick.
Why was Echo of Moscow closed down at such speed?
You know, and we know why we are closing. Formally, it was some kind of Roskomnadzor. We have an institution controlling all the media. And it was, you are violated the law, the new law about propaganda and anti-propaganda. Easy. They needed only one thing, a decision, a very high decision. High decision to close Echo of Moscow.
Roscom, Russia's media watchdog, says it blocked Echo of Moscow for spreading, quote, deliberately false information about the actions of Russian military personnel, as well as, quote, information calling for extremist activity and violence. It wasn't only Echo of Moscow. The TV station, TV Rain, was also closed down. And the newspaper, Novaya Gazeta, has announced it will cease production until the war is over. Under Russia's new fake news laws, you can go to prison for describing the invasion of Ukraine as a war. And for Sergei, the station's closure was a culmination of something building for years, but also different to the other crises Echo of Moscow had survived.
Because I think it was the final war, a final struggle for Putin. And it was prepared for some years. And even in 28, when the war against Georgia and the Crimea in 2015, it wasn't so dangerous and it wasn't so important for Putin and his administration. I think he was sure of his success. And now it's different. It's quite different. Now, and they prepared the society for those events for, I think, 10 or 15 years, I think. And the destruction of civil society, it's a detail of this destruction.
This didn't really come as much of a surprise to Sergei.
I have to say they gave us 2 weeks to take all our mess for 28 years in this office we were. For 28 years of our 31, it was a drama for all our journalists. We are more than 100 of the technicians and very young people and not so young people. It was a very gloomy event.
Clearing out the station's beloved ramshackle offices, housed in an old apartment block in Moscow, was deeply personal. Its walls were lined with portraits of famous people from all over the world who visited the studios, every room packed to the ceiling with books and papers.
Everybody knows when somebody is dying, it's very hard to get in his rooms and his apartment and to see his books, letters and something else. And I know it, my parents, for example, the apartment of my parents and me and my son, we were doing it for months. And here, it was this same feeling.
And so the journalist of Echo of Moscow began a new chapter, no longer working under that name, but trying to keep up the programs and reporting that the station did before.
Программа с Алексеем Венедиктовым. Будем наблюдать.
Sergei's now back on air on a YouTube channel called Live Nail.
Добрый день. Сейчас 12 часов. Да, все правильно.
He's working again with Echo of Moscow's editor-in-chief, Alexei Venediktov.
But now we have a chat on Telegram. We try to support each other and we go on. We created two channels on YouTube. Живой гость, The Living Nail, and Dilettant, the historical channel. And almost all of our main journalists created their own channels on YouTube. And they recreated and invented new programs and recreated our old programs. It's wonderful.
Sergei, it's part of a tradition of Russian journalists finding ways to get around censorship.
Some is that it was, for example, when you got some anti-Soviet book, for example, the groups of people, they used to type it in 5 or 7 copies and then to distribute and to among friends. It was very dangerous and much more dangerous than now, because now it's so many people can do it, man, now. So many people. Even for the Russian machine, it's not possible to arrest everybody. Or not, who knows?
Since the war began, many Russian journalists have gone into exile. But Sergei has no intention of joining them.
So we decided not to leave Russia, not to leave Moscow. Not to leave Moscow. It's our country, it's our city. You love Moscow, but me, I love Moscow too. I was born in Moscow, and for 66 years I'm living in Moscow. I know Moscow, and my father, for example, and he built all the Moscow underground for 30 years. And I think my family made more things than the whole government of Russia. I think so. It becomes very dangerous for many journalists, but it's our duty, it's our profession. We have to do it. We have to do it.
Elena Servetas was already safe outside of Russia, in France, where she'd been working as the radio station's Paris and Geneva correspondent for the best part of a decade. She's proud of what Echo of Moscow offered, something different to state-controlled media.
I mean, Echo Moscow was not oppositional radio. It was radio of information. It was a place for discussion for everybody and different political powers. And it was a place where people who wanted to find some political analysis and, you know, news, arts, truth.
And she was in Paris when the news broke that the station was being taken off air.
I had my colleague who wrote me a message. Have you seen? Of course, I saw already. And we started to discuss in WhatsApp how it will be. Will be it closed or we have still a chance? She was saying, oh my God, it's for me. It was really a disaster. You know, some people are living in Russia with their salary. And so she has a kid, the flat to pay, you know, and so we were discussing all this.
Elena says many journalists who are unwilling to report the war the way the government wants have fled Russia. The risks for those who've stayed, like Echo of Moscow's editor-in-chief, Alexei Venediktov, are all too apparent.
Our editor-in-chief once came back home and at his door, somebody threw the head of a pig with blood and they so it's a clear message with threat, you know. Everything is dangerous today.
And another prominent editor, Dmitry Muratov, who last year won the Nobel Peace Prize, was assaulted. Red paint was thrown over him while he was travelling on a train a few days ago. Elena believes that in both cases, the intention was obvious.
It's to make people afraid, even if, for instance, Алексей Венедиктов и Дмитрий Муратов, won't be afraid. For those who could even think of doing something or to tell something or to come and, you know, single person protest, it's a clear message that you will have a price to pay. It's to show other people, so it can be dangerous if you dare to speak. Like every normal human being, of course it's frightening. Of course you want to shout. But it's not the thing that will stop me one day to report and to broadcast and then to speak. I'm not as exposed as all my colleagues in Moscow. But yes, it's frightening.
It's an uphill struggle for independent journalists in Russia. Not just keeping safe, but getting through to millions of people who believe disinformation and propaganda about the war in Ukraine, much of which is broadcast by state TV.
And they don't believe. They prefer not to comment. They prefer to cut this conversation. They think that I was brainwashed. But listen, let's check, I don't know, all other medias, but I don't believe Italians, I don't believe Americans, I don't believe Brits. So it's they have the response to everything. They have their own opinion. And also, you can imagine that you should accept in your own head that you are part of this machine which is killing civilians and kids. And I think those who are convinced, who are watching Russian TV, now they're laughing that Bucha is fake. They will never believe this. They're laughing. So what about Bucha? Ah, ha, ha, it was played. The people were moving. This body was moving. And they will never believe.
Back in Moscow, Sergei shares Elena's frustrations. He thinks Russians have been primed to accept propaganda about the war, and that many are choosing not to look for the truth. But how easy is that to find in Russia right now?
It's easy. It's very easy. It's very easy on Telegram channels, for example. First, on Telegram channels, because it's possible without VPN.
While the Telegram app is often a hub for false and misleading claims about what's happening in Ukraine, it's also been a source of information for those in Russia who want to look beyond state media. Although, Sergei tells me, for many, it's simplest not to.
It's possible to get all the possible news from Ukraine and from everywhere. And because of it, I say that Russians are able to get news, to get facts. But I think many of us don't want to get it. It's easy on every smartphone. It's possible in 1 second to have all the news. They don't want. I don't know. It's some kind of comfort to have one kind of news.
And at times, he feels very sad for his fellow Russians, especially those who don't agree with the Kremlin.
It's a shame for me, and it's a tragedy for many people here in Russia who are against, but they are not to prove it to our Ukrainian friends and relatives. But we cannot think how to do it.
Echo of Moscow's wavelength has now been taken over by state-sponsored Sputnik Radio. Quite a contrast to before.
I have a button one in my car with our frequency, but I don't push it. I am waiting for some better times.
And despite the hostility he and other journalists face in Russia, he refuses to be deterred.
No. It's useless to be frightened. It won't help anybody. I'm too lazy, I think, because I have things to do. When I think about threats, it's impossible to do things.
I'm Mariana Spring, and that's the end of this episode of War on Truth. Please do get in touch with us if you have stories you want to share or things you'd like us to investigate. You can contact me by email at mariana@bbc.co.uk.
There's a story about Vladimir Putin. When he was a teenager, he saw a film that he became obsessed by. He would watch it, all 5 hours of it, over and over again. And decades later, he'd say how important it was to the life he chose. It's called The Shield and the Sword, and it tells the story of a Soviet secret agent working at the highest level in the Nazi war machine. The film prompted Putin to join the KGB. What amazed me, he'd say of the film, was how one man's efforts could achieve what whole armies could not. How one spy could decide the fate of thousands of people. This is the story of a spy who has the fate of tens of millions of people in his hands, told by the men and women who've observed his rise and rise, the Putin experts and the Russia watchers. It's the story of a man who's seen an empire fall and his nation humiliated, and who's torn up the global order trying to restore past glory and avenge the slights of the past. I'm Johnny Diamond, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Putin, the story of the man who's changing the world. Subscribe now on BBC Sounds.